Jeff Lader, really, really interesting man. He was a bodybuilder, didn't start bodybuilding until he was 30 years old. He did something extremely remarkable. It took him almost 10 years, I believe, to become pro. You'll never believe what he did after he turned pro. What does he do now? He has a company, L8R Lader, and Jeff Lader, of course, after his last name, and his wife and 15 other coaches teach people how to lose weight, how to get healthy, nutrition. He also helps some others in bodybuilding, but his main focus is addressing what I believe is the number one issue, the number one biggest issue in our country, and that is obesity and overweight, being overweight. No politician will touch it. We see it all the time. People don't want to ask for help. They hear these yo-yo diets. Jeff will tell you that, you know, it's a lifestyle change. It's something, it's not hard. You have to do it. It's one of the hardest things you'll ever do, but it's not hard to make the change if you want to. But his approach is quite unique. He works with over 15,000 clients. Like I said, 15 coaches, health and nutrition. How do we get there? Jeff's approach is very unique, from his mother doing aerobics in the 80s with Jane Fonda to long distance running to, you know, getting access to a weight room, to bodybuilding, and then into fitness as a career, which he had never planned. But now he helps people along the way. Great conversation with Jeff Lader. I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Joey Pins. People ask me, how did I lose 130 pounds? The quick answer is always discipline. I started my business, wasn't paying attention to my health, was eating too much, you know, drinking too much sweets. My daughter was born. Next thing I know, I'm pre-diabetic, I have hypertension. I knew something had to change. Discipline. I, like many of you, have faced many challenges in your career, in your family, in your life, in your faith. How did you attack them? How did you approach them? How did you solve them, hopefully? It all had to have some degree of discipline. I'm also asked, how did you found and start a tech business that lasted over 25 years? Discipline. I was committed to it, enjoyed technology, didn't enjoy some aspects of it, but knew it was necessary. Discipline. Our podcast mission, how do we use discipline to better ourselves and society? Join me, please, as I talk to interesting people and discuss how they use discipline in their family, in their passion, in their careers, and how it helped them. Our podcast vision, growth through learning from others. Joey Pins Discipline Conversations. It'll be light and serious. Join us, please. Thank you for consideration. Jeff Lader, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate your time. I love your energy. I love your message. What are we going to do about the number one issue in our country? Obesity is everywhere. We never heard from any politician during this pandemic how, you know, getting healthy, perfect opportunity for them to say, go out and start walking. Let's go out and get healthy. Let's just, and nobody wants to talk about it except for great advocates like yourself.
That's so true. It's preventative, right? And it's, and even, proactive and reactive. I think it can make a huge difference with overall health, as well as, you know, battling any sort of other diseases that come our way. I'm sure we're not done. You know, there's always going to be something coming at us. But yeah, taking care of yourself. I mean, we have one body, and we need to take care of it. And so many of us don't. So yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem. I agree.
It's a huge problem. And you know, and you talk about this, you know, in plenty of interviews and your, you know, your information that's out there, how it's a tough industry because there's not the best intentions of some of these companies to help people lose weight.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, that's kind of that probably makes up the majority of what I talk about, because, people absorb information. I mean, you can get it from all angles, you get it from everywhere. And there's not a shortage of information. There's an overabundance of information. Right. And it's hard to filter and know what is right for you, and who to trust. And so, you know, the number one core value in my company and that I try to live by is no bullshit. And yes. I'm very much to the point. I don't beat around the bush. What you see is what you get. And I feel like that is the only way that I could do it. And so many people, I think, operate, especially in the health and fitness industry, from a place of profitability. That's their main driver. Like they just want money. And I get that. We all have to make a living, but if you're in this industry, you should be in it because you're passionate about helping other people. And is there money to be made? Absolutely. But fulfillment in helping other people is where it's really at. And and if you're doing it right, you're going to make plenty of money. But unfortunately, most people don't have that attitude when they get into the business.
Yeah, it's horrible. And your background is so fascinating to me because you were in IT for a while. You had a car parts business. You were woodworking. And then you talk about how your mother kind of inadvertently introduced you into just exercise when you were young with aerobics in the 80s.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the reason why it was so indirect like that is because I never viewed fitness as a real career path. I didn't view it as a real way to make money. It was just kind of one of those things that you do as a hobby. If you get into personal training, it's something that to help put you through school, you know, as a college student, you know, get a weekend certification type of deal. And that's it. And I was exposed to it early on in my youth, as a, you know, a child of the 80s, my mom was, you know, into aerobics. She would run 5 and 10 Ks on the weekends. And, that rubbed off on me somehow. Obviously not the running or the aerobics part, but just living fit and making an effort to take care of yourself. And so that was something that, you know, I'll be forever grateful for. But it wasn't really until things started to take off organically that, and people wanted my help for some reason, that, I had no other choice but to make it my primary source of income and keeping a roof over my head's family or my family's head. Sorry.
I know what you meant. Yeah. You get into bodybuilding and, like when you're 30, work at it hard, you're in many competitions, you become pro, and then you do the most odd thing to me is that you just resign.
Yeah. Bodybuilding is a tough sport. It takes a lot out of you. And by the time I had actually earned my pro card, which is an incredibly difficult thing to do, and I wish I could say I always believed I was going to do it, but I didn't. It was such a hard thing. And so many people get they're really, really far advanced in the sport and get to be really accomplished, but they never can quite seal the deal. And I thought that was going to be me. I was like, when they talk to me, I'll be like, oh yeah, he was a pretty good bodybuilder, but he could never quite go all the way. And I always viewed turning pro as my finish line. So it was kind of like, you know, maybe I pre-framed it in my mind that was going to be my stopping point. But by the time I turned pro, it was my 40th competition.
Wow.
Which is a lot. The average bodybuilder probably does less than 10. So for me to have gone through it as many times as I did, for one, it meant that I loved it. And I took a lot of things from that sport, but most of it was positive, honestly. But it was never something I viewed as being like my career. And I never wanted to be defined as Jeff the bodybuilder. I didn't. Some people love that and they want that, and that's great for them, but it's not something that I wanted for myself.
And how were you introduced to bodybuilding?
Probably just magazines when I was a kid, you know, idolizing, you know, these guys that were just enormous in magazines as a kid, back when paper magazines were a thing.
I remember.
It must have made an impact on me because I remember as soon as I was allowed into the weight room, which I believe was at the time was age 12, I couldn't have been more excited. And I think I started out just doing sit-ups on a bench because that's all I knew, you know, from elementary school and the little PE classes that I had. And, you know, okay, I can do sit-ups, yeah. So figure out some of the other equipment was a matter of observing those around me and trying to mimic and not hurt myself. I think my mom probably showed me a few things here and there, but, you know, she was doing her aerobics thing with her leg warmers and leotards.
Absolutely. You mentioned magazines. Whenever I explain magazines, I have two daughters. I know you have three. Yeah. And I always say, well, girls, it's kind of like Instagram, but on paper. I guess that's the best way I can describe what a magazine
is. Yeah, that's a good way. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And I don't know a lot about bodybuilding, but I know at one time it was very controversial and a bit dirty. You want to talk about that at all, about steroids and...
Oh, not was. It still is. And if anything, really? It's probably worse now than it ever was.
Wow.
I mean, for anybody that's been even mildly associated with the fitness world has probably heard about all the deaths that have occurred in the last couple of years. And I mean, that's not a new thing, but there's definitely been a whole lot more than normal as to why. People can speculate. But, you know, I think that it has a lot to do with impatience, and that's just kind of the world that we live in now. And so people will abuse steroids, which they've been doing for a long time. But it's something that people just, you know, they want to be the best now. And so they figure more is better. And so they start taking more and more and never take breaks. And they just do really, really unhealthy things. And this is men and women. It's not just men.
Wow.
And even in divisions where muscle is less of a criteria, it's used abundantly. And then there's coaches that just like an automatic cocktail of exotic performance enhancing drugs that they prescribe to everybody.
Wow.
Not prescribe, a sign. Obviously they can't prescribe, but it's really discouraging to see that. And it is part of the reason why I myself retired. But, you know, cause I mean, there's, but you know, on the positive side of things, I'm sure you're familiar with the program 75 Hard.
No, I'm not. Right?
You're not. Okay. So 75 Hard is created by Andy Frisella. He's the founder of First Form. He has a great podcast, a little outspoken guy, but, he created this program called 75 Hard and it has very specific criteria to it, where you have to do two workouts per day of at least 45 minutes. One of them has to be outside. You have to take a progress picture every day. You have to read 20 minutes every single day. You have to drink a gallon of water every single day. Wow. No cheat meals, no alcohol, and you have to follow a diet of some sort. And he doesn't call it a fitness program. The whole intent behind it is to help strengthen your mind. It was for mental fortitude. And I remember the first time I heard about it, I completely understood it, because that's how I always viewed contest prep, getting ready for a competition. And it was bodybuilding. It was, yes, there's a lot of physical work that needs to go into it, and probably a lot more than people realize. It's not just lifting weights. We do way more cardio than anyone preparing for like a marathon. Just probably two or three times the amount of cardio that someone preparing for a marathon does. And it's just, it's strict. It's round the clock, 24/7, everything you eat, everything you drink, your sleep patterns, your stress levels, everything has to do with how your body ultimately looks when you're getting on that stage. But it's not just the physical part that you have to do. It's getting yourself to do it. And that has so much to do with your mental fortitude, whether you have it or you don't have it. And so that's, you know, as he said, that was the whole intent behind 75 Hard. That's one thing that he wanted people to get from it. And the thing about 75 Hard is that if you miss even just one teeny little element, like maybe only went 44 minutes instead of 45 minutes, or you weren't able to do one of them outside, you start over from day one. And so it's very cutthroat like that. Getting ready for a competition isn't quite like that, but I'm very OCD and stubborn. And so I never missed a day. I never missed any element of anything. And that's definitely the benefit that I got from bodybuilding, is that mental fortitude, that discipline that I don't think it can be replicated in any other environment.
Is 75 represents 75 days?
75 days. Yep. Sorry.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And getting back to, is there drug testing in bodybuilding?
No, there are in some divisions or in some leagues, but not in the one that I competed in.
Wow. Fascinating.
I think they say on paper that they do, or that it's like not allowed, but it's not regulated.
And you mentioned that you're 5'9", 230 pounds. You were at points eating 8,000 calories a day.
At the highest, yeah.
The highest. I mean, you talk about the difference between dieting is easier than force feeding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I used to look forward to dieting because it meant I could eat less. I would much rather be starving than at the verge of puking.
Yeah. Wow. And the reason you need all those calories is for what? It's just for pure muscle gain?
Yeah, to grow. You hit certain limits with your body and to try and push past those, you have to go to extremes. And it's, both ways, whether you're trying to get super, super lean or trying to add new mass, it's, initially when you first start out, you can build 10, 15 pounds of muscle within a few months when you first start lifting. But after those initial gains, you have to fight for every ounce. And so, if I gained a couple pounds of stage weight in muscle each year, that was a huge, huge accomplishment. Some people grow at faster rates than that, but it was a uphill battle every day for me. I'm not a big guy naturally. It took everything I got to get to the size that I'm at.
So do people still come to you now for bodybuilding?
Yeah. Yeah, they still do. It's not what we focus on. And I think the message that I put out there is it's not the sexy marketing message that people want to hear. Because I talk about health. And unless you've actually been through the process itself and had been burned by it, which is just a matter of time most of the time, you wouldn't necessarily understand why I'd be talking about it that way. For the average competitor or first time competitor, they would go to whoever's making the best promises, whoever is posting the most before and afters, posting the most winners, maybe the best price. But we focus on, a life after the stage as well. And I've seen people that have been fit their entire lives go through a contest prep process, get on stage, and then they're never fit again, ever.
Wow.
And that's unfortunate. And that happens all the time. But it's because of the extremes that people go to, lack of coaching, and carelessness on the part of the coach. So, I think me being an athlete first and having competed as many times as I did, I look at it from the athlete's perspective, and I want to make sure that they are taken care of, and that they have a life after the stage.
Is bodybuilding good for a person's overall health?
No.
It's not. It's detrimental.
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's so extreme. Mm. The practices that you go through, you can learn a lot, like I said, and the benefit I got out of it was more mental strength, right? But I am very healthy. I think there are good ways of doing it. But by the time you're on stage, as lean as you are, you're in single digit body fat percentages, you're dehydrated. It's almost like the Jerry Seinfeld thing where it's like, where's death? Okay, here's death. We're going to back it off just a little bit. You're not in a healthy place when you're on stage, but it's a temporary state that you're in. And as long as you know that going into it and you're taking the proper precautions and then you recover from it appropriately as you're coming out of it, then it's okay. It's fine. So on stage, no. But in general, it's not a lifestyle. People say it's a bodybuilding lifestyle. It's not a lifestyle. It doesn't resemble a lifestyle in any way, shape, or form. But as long as you have a good balance outside of those extreme times, then I think it's something you can sustainably do for as long as you want.
The way you describe it, it sounds like a boxer, wrestler kind of cutting weight and what they are when they go to the scale. Is it similar?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. The final stages, the final few months going into a competition, the main concern is just cutting body fat. Wow. And that's the primary concern. And the secondary concern is to keep the muscle that you have and not lose any. Cause a lot of people, I think some people have the impression that they're going to gain muscle through that process, but there's absolutely no way that's going to happen unless you are on drugs. And even then it's an uphill battle because you just don't even have the raw materials that you're consuming in the form of food to, for your body to produce new muscle. So it's just a matter of getting lean enough. And that takes extremes most of the time because your body fights back against, your body doesn't want to go there. Your body has all sorts of self-defense mechanisms that it puts in place to prevent you from getting there. I mean, that happens in early stages of fat loss with people, just everyday people trying to get leaner. But when you're taking it this far, your body is like on high alert and you feel every bit of it. You do not feel good when you're that low.
Wow. And just a couple more, it fascinates me. I don't know anything about the industry. How is the judging? Is it, do they actually weigh you? Do they measure your body fat? Are there like raw numbers and you're put in certain categories and then the judges, how do they judge?
Well, there's different divisions and they're like with bodybuilding itself, it is based solely on weight. There's another division that they call classic physique, which is, it's bodybuilding type poses, but you're limited, your weight is limited according to your height. And so it, actually they're trying to keep them smaller. So like me being 5'9" with a stage weight of 230 pounds, that would never fly in classic physique. So I at 5'9", I believe at the amateur level, you'd be limited to 196 pounds. So quite a bit smaller, right? Wow. And that number might be off. It's hard to remember individual heights. But the other division is called men's physique, where you're actually in board shorts. And so you're not displaying your legs, and that there is no weight regulation there, but there is a height regulation. But yeah, in terms of how the judging goes, I mean, you're judged on different criteria for each division. But in bodybuilding, you have to be lean, you have to be symmetrical. Your posing has to be on point. You have to be able to display your body in the best way possible. Overall muscularity has a lot to do with it. So size does matter, but it's not the only thing. And my opinion of it when it comes to helping other people get ready is that if you don't come in lean enough, you don't deserve to win. So that's the first thing. And then after that, as long as the muscularity is there, the shape, the symmetry, the aesthetics are there, you should win. But you know, when you get to the upper levels of the competition world, everyone looks good. And so it's a matter of who has the least amount of flaws, because we all have them.
And you mentioned where you don't have to show your legs. That's fascinating to me. So it's only upper body.
Yeah. They're barely flexing too. It's more like a fitness model division. It's, you know, I don't want to say anything disparaging about it, cause it is very, very difficult. But yeah, they don't technically display their legs. They're in board shorts to their knees.
Huh. You know, I played soccer all my life, so I just kind of developed large legs. So I'm kind of built bottom heavy, I guess you could say. And you know, I don't spend a lot of time in the gym, but when I do, I notice that a lot of the men focus upper body, and not much on legs.
Is that common? Right?
I'm sorry?
We skip leg day.
Yeah. And of course, with many sports, I mean, your legs are everything, right? The foundation. And it's fascinating to me, Jeff. Tell us about the moving, the migration from bodybuilding to helping people, you know, with obesity and just getting healthy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think we took an opposite path for, I think, compared to most coaches. I mean, we were in the online space before many were. We've been doing this for a long time, but the first people we worked with were competitors. And I remember when we first started working with non-competitors, like just the, you know, lifestyle, trying to improve their health, I started to doubt my skills. I was like, maybe it's something different. I don't understand why this isn't working. But what it comes down to is just what's going on between their ears. It's a different mentality. And, you know, they're typically not as dedicated. They have more internal battles that they're going through, some bad habits in place that need more work to get through them. And you can't be so cutthroat with the way that you're eating or the way that you're training. And so it was a big transition, but a lot of how I approach lifestyle is stuff that I've learned from the bodybuilding world. And what I mean by that is almost by going in the opposite direction, because it is so strict. And I think when you are so strict, or when that expectation is there for people, they do the opposite. And so I think so many people put the pressure on themselves, like, oh, I have to be 100%, I have to do this, I have to go all in. But with, we're hardwired to be either all in or all out. And so if somebody screws up just a little bit on their diet, like, ah, oh, man, I had an M&M today, might as well eat three pizzas and get drunk tonight because I blew my diet on that M&M. And that's like our, that's human nature. And it's, and so I think if you set the expectation of consistency rather than perfection, then you end up with, you know, getting a lot better results in the end. And just the extremes that contest that I was exposed to in the contest prep world, has turned me off to it. And I get a lot of people that approach me or talk to me about competing. And I think it could be an absolute amazing life altering experience for a lot of people, but you have to be right for it. You have to be prepared for it. And so even for those that do come to me with their primary goal of getting on stage, I think it's imperative that they have the lifestyle and the habits associated with the lifestyle first. Because if they go from eating like an average American to the extremes and rigid regimen of a bodybuilder, even if they follow it strictly and they go all in for 3 months, what are they going to go back to when they're done? Their previous lifestyle. And that's where you see the really bad effects take place. They gain back way more weight than they ever had before. It creates all sorts of eating disorders, body dysmorphia, bad relationship with food. The extremes of any sort of diet that anybody could experience are going to be amplified in contest prep.
Fascinating. So I don't know if you know this about me, but I gained a lot of weight when I started my business in the 90s. I shot up to 340 pounds, and the doctor said to me, I was pre-diabetic, pre-hypertension. If you don't change these ways, you're not going to see your daughter graduate. So that was kind of my come to Jesus moment. It was my rock bottom. Because you don't feel bad. You don't feel like you have high blood pressure. You don't feel like you have bad, you just kind of get used to that weight. So then, I didn't tell anybody, but I just cut out all sugar drinks and I ate half of everything that I was eating before. And I just worked out every day. And, I lost about 100 pounds in about 7 months. And then I started doing some triathlons. I just kind of got back to my way. But I needed to hit that. And when people ask me today, how'd you lose it? Like there's some secret, Jeff. I'm going to tell them, just climb trees or something. And, it's just discipline. I just say it's just discipline and focus, which is the underlying theme of what you're talking about, what I like to talk about as well. But when people come to you, have they hit that rock bottom? Have more than one attempt? What are they like when they come to you?
Some have. Some have hit that rock bottom point, that point that caused them to finally take action. Right. But others, and it's funny that you say that because I've encountered people like that, but then they still don't take action. And even if they're faced with like the prospect of dying, they still can't make that leap. They can't take the action necessary to save their own life, even though it's right there in front of them. And maybe they don't have a lot to live for. I don't know. I can only imagine that would be the case, because I think when you're considering something like this, everyone has different reasons for doing so, but I don't know that everybody understands the true reason behind it. Because when you look at like fat loss and what most people's goals are, because we always talk about goal setting and why are they here? And what most people typically say to that, oh, I want to lose weight. I want to feel better in my own skin. I want to have more energy. Those are the common answers, right? But that is never, never their true reason.
Right.
And I don't even know that they know it either. And so it takes some digging. And that's where, this is where you become a coach and not just someone that's changing their food around or giving them workout assignments. That's a robot. That's all you need for that. You can Google that stuff. But if you really want to bring change that's permanent and something that is really, really going to impact their life, you really have to get down to what drives our decision-making. What is the reason why are we here? How did we get here? What decisions are we making? What's driving our decision-making that keeps us here? And now how can we get out? And so we really try to figure out why. Why do they want this? And then help them recognize all the things that they are going to get when they reach that point that they think they want to get to. So let's say that you say, Jeff, I want to lose 50 pounds. Why do you want to lose 50 pounds? Ah, you know, I just saw myself in a picture the other day and I didn't realize I had gotten that big and I want to lose some weight, or I have this trip coming up, or, you know, whatever reason. It's always surface level, very, very surface level. Mm. And what they will realize as they go through this is, you know, when they lose those 50 pounds, for one, it's doing something hard. They've proven that they can do something that most people can't,
right?
Which is very empowering. They gain all sorts of confidence because of how they look and how they feel. So energy levels go up, their mood enhances. They have this increased confidence. They're riding high. And then what does that do for them? Well, it could lead to new relationships, enhanced relationships, better career, better interaction with the everyday world, more confidence in just anything. And that, and it just, it can completely change the trajectory of your life. You have to be open to it. Hmm. And you have to be, I guess, you have to allow your mind to be pliable and be coachable. But when you come, and sometimes it does take hitting that breaking point, as you said, hitting rock bottom. But the benefit that you get from it is so much more than losing 50 pounds.
Right.
It's not that there's 50 pounds less of you. It's all the other things that means for you in your life. And it took me a long time to realize that that's ultimately what you get.
It's so true, because you realize that you're more powerful than you think. You have, you know, mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that those listening to this who, you know, who want to lose weight and want to do it permanently will take heed and come to you or come to somebody that'll make them accountable. You know, you mentioned pictures. I remember when after this discussion with my doctor, by the way, my daughter just graduated college, so I saw that all the way through, but I remember seeing pictures of my wedding, and I remember telling my friends, why did you guys let me get this fat? I remember started blaming people like it was their fault, you know, and perhaps it was tongue in cheek a little bit, but still I'm hoping that people will just say, look, I see myself in a picture that, you know, these days doctors are even afraid to tell people they're overweight because it might hurt their feelings. I understand right. You can get a note now from your psychiatrist and if the doctor doesn't have to weigh you, they won't. I mean, it's ridiculous, but it's just absolutely horrible. So it's just so important. I was in the airport today, and it's just, you know, I don't mean to be mean or anything, but, you know, obesity and overweight, I understand the numbers are around 70% of Americans with those two combined. And when you're just in the public, you can just see it. And I'm not poking fun at all, but it's, you can do it. I did it. I'm not that remarkable. People can do it, and you want somebody to hold you accountable. You want somebody to point you in the direction. Come to somebody like Jeff. There's not really a question in there, Jeff. Just kind of a rant.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it's just to kind of talk about what you mentioned. I mean, that's the world we live in, and unfortunately, it's only making things worse. And I don't know if you've heard this, but life expectancy has actually gone down. For the first time in the history of mankind. What are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, it should never do that. But I think it's a matter of like, hey, let's all be okay with being overweight. And there's the whole, and this is controversial. You know, the healthy at every size. Can you be healthy at every size? I think it's possible, but then you also have to look at the data. And the data doesn't lie. There's a very, very strong correlation between obesity and heart disease and diabetes and high blood pressure and all these other detrimental health biomarkers that we can't ignore, you know. And then let's all be honest. Like, how many obese elderly people do you see?
Yeah, none.
None.
Yeah.
And why is that? Well, they don't make it that far. Yeah. So it's a big, big, big thing.
And I know I probably have these numbers wrong and I don't have anybody fact checking me right now, but I believe COVID deaths are around 1 million. And I believe the comorbidity obesity was over like 70% of those deaths that had that. So, you know,
yeah,
when you're, you don't see athletes dying from COVID. They get over from it. You know, they get over quickly. You don't,
I was over it in 4 days.
Yeah. I think I was, I never tested positive, but I think I was over in about 2 days myself. I had a sore throat and, you know, I didn't want to leave the place. I didn't want to get anybody infected. I kept testing negative, but yeah, I seemed to beat it pretty quickly. But it, it's horrible. You've worked with over 7,000 people. You've got 15 coaches. Very, very impressive. I love that you have core values. So many businesses, so many people don't do that. No BS, show up, walk the walk. We are family, growth mindset. Let's talk about it, Jeff. No BS.
You know, I think when we originally wrote this, I don't know that we understood the concept of a core value in terms of it should define how we operate internally, right? Yes. Versus like a brand promise, which would be, you know, how we interact with the world, or what, you know, with our service, what is it that we promise? And what it came down to is that it's both for us. So it's a part of our brand promises as well as our core values. I mean, no BS, because the fitness world, the industry itself is unfortunately full of it. And it's very sleazy. It's very fraudulent. It's for the most part, it doesn't help people. I mean, if we're all dying younger than we were 10, 20 years ago, the fitness world is failing. And it's not, it's obviously not the sole sole thing to blame, but it's certainly not helping. And you look at the success rate of diets, and it's not success, it's a failure rate, right? Most people, if they see any weight loss, they just gain it back. Why? Well, probably the method that you used to lose it in the first place. That probably didn't help. And I would say, I, you know, hand over my heart, I would say that diets make us fatter.
Interesting.
I don't think it's helping us. I think it's hurting us. And so something needs to change. And so we try to be as straightforward and remove any sort of BS that we can. And I try to do that with any sort of content that I put out there, and try to guide people on the right way. And it's a, I feel like it's a losing battle most days, but for those that are willing to listen and those that have the, you know, are open-minded enough, they start to see through the BS that is the fitness world.
Yeah, you've got great content. I took your, I didn't mean to interrupt, I apologize. I took your quiz, your weight quiz. Your material I downloaded, you know, great food substitutions when you travel, great, great content out there. And I really, that probably goes into the next core value of just showing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and internally it is, you know, we want to show up for each other. I mean, we're very much like a family, and no matter how big we get, we always want to operate like a small company. And we want to take care of each other. And we all have lives and our own battles and trials, and we all want to be there for each other. And, and we, I think we very much are. And it's a cool place to be. I think we all work remotely too, which makes it a little bit more difficult, but we have tons of interaction every single day, and we all support each other, and we all believe in our mission. And it couldn't not be a part of our core values. It has to be there because we all need that support. And if you're not getting it elsewhere, you can at least get it here.
Yeah, I hear show up. I think accountability. And talk about, you know, if you're not, you're in the greater Salt Lake City area, Utah. Yeah. And so if you're working remote, what challenges do those bring?
Well, as a company or with like the people that we work with, or both?
Both.
Well, I think it's hard to establish company culture, I think, if you're all remote.
Yeah.
It's hard to make sure the relationships are created. I mean, and that goes hand in hand, I think, with the people that we work with. We call ourselves a relationship-based coaching company. We're not just a coaching company. Mm. And so it's important for us to create those relationships with people, create those relationships of trust. And you know, how we've been able to do it, it's, I think, just as much interaction as we possibly can. I think most of my team is located locally, at least within 4 hours driving distance. And so we do try to get together. In fact, once a month we get together for a day-long learning day where we go over new material. We try to keep, you know, our learning as much as we possibly can at all times. We have you know, meetings on a regular cadence that allow us to interact and joke. And there's a lot of banter that happens on our Slack channel and on texts. And we're all really good friends. We get together socially and we choose. I mean, I always say you don't choose your coworkers, but I feel like we do. And we would all, whether we were working together or not, we'd be friends. And so that's a pretty cool thing. That's pretty rare as well. But with our, you know, with our members that are, you know, could be as far away as, you know, the other side of the country, some out of the country, we, you know, we want to make sure we're showing up for them. Obviously there's the accountability element in a coaching position, but also just being there as a support for them. Cause you know, getting your health in check, getting, you know, even if you just want to get a six pack or if you want to get off your diabetes medication or whatever, there's not a lot of support for that. Sometimes you don't even get that support at home. And so we want to make sure that we're providing that. And, you know, I think online interaction is one thing. Zoom calls is the best replacement we have for face-to-face interaction. But just always being there, not just once a week, say, hi, how you doing? Here's your new plan, which is how most people do it.
And you work with your wife, your beautiful wife, I might add. And how's that dynamic work with your life-work balance? Does it have its challenges?
Oh, it definitely does. You know, when we first started this, we both had other jobs. And so this wasn't our primary source of income. It wasn't what was taking up most of our time, but we got to the point where we were so busy where we were both working full-time schedules, you know, 9 to 5. And then from 5 to around 8 o'clock at night, we would meet with people in person. And it was just my wife and I for the first 5, 6 years of business. And then all day on weekends, all day Saturday, we'd see 15 appointments each day and we did everything in person. It really changed me as a man. Like I used to be very introverted, couldn't do any public speaking at all. In fact, even when we met with people at first, Jen, my very extroverted wife, would do all the talking. And that dynamic shifted a little bit over the years and now I don't shut up. But it's, you know, for us, finding that balance has been tough. And I would say that it's always a battle, especially when you work from home and there's really no separation from work or home. And so it's important to have that distinction and almost set cut off times for yourself. And I still struggle with that in full transparency. But my wife is kind of the yin to my yang. I mean, she has to help pull me out sometimes. Actually not sometimes, a lot of times. And help me see where, what matters the most in life. And, I'm a very OCD person. And, when I get into something, I go all the way in. And so it's hard to sometimes, find balance. But I think because of that, because of her, I am able to have some element of that. I wouldn't say that I'm perfectly balanced because I resist a lot. But you know, and we have our moments, just like any other couple, for sure, where it gets difficult sometimes to work with your spouse. But we've been able to make it work, and I think it's probably mostly because of her.
Have you found, generally speaking, that women want to be coached by women and men want to be coached by men?
No.
Not the case.
You know, we've had, I don't know how many coaches we've hired over the years, but I think it depends on the quality of the coach. And, you know, I do get this question a lot. Like what does it take to become a coach at later? Mm-hmm. And, my number one criteria is that you're a good person. Mm-hmm. Second is that you're personable. That you have a good personality, that you're easy to get along with, that you can connect with people. The knowledge side of the equation is secondary to me because that can be taught, that can be learned. I can teach you that, but I can't teach the other stuff. That's either there or it's not. So if that's not there, then you have no place here. And, you know, third to this, maybe even second to the knowledge is that you're a hard worker. Right. This is a tough job. I mean, people are depending on you, and it's a huge responsibility. And I think, you know, part of showing up is being willing to over deliver and be there for people. And sometimes that does mean awkward hours, and sometimes it does mean going the extra mile. But the impact it'll have on them is, I don't think we would ever understand. It's just enormous. And so if you're not willing to do that, and a lot of people, unfortunately, that we've hired have not, and that's why they're not here anymore. It's almost a direct reason why those people aren't here. You know, you're just not going to be successful, and your impact's going to be very limited. And unfortunately, I would say I would classify most coaches in that category, but the team that we've got is just amazing. They understand it, and they see the value in it. And we try to hire within, we try to hire from our own clients because they understand it. They get it. They're bought in. They, less needs to be taught. You know, they already have the culture.
And that really comes into your third core value, walk the walk. So you just got to be a good person outside of the coaching.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we don't want to be hypocrites either. You know, and actually, I remember when I first started talking about donuts, I got some pushback about that. Like, people would be like, how can you possibly talk about donuts and be in the fitness industry? I'm like, because I'm trying to be real. I like donuts. I'm not going to hide that. I think it's okay to eat donuts. I think it's okay to eat almost anything. And some people are going to hear this and think that's blasphemy. And I've lived that life. I mean, challenge me on how to be strict on a diet. I bet I got you beat, because I've been more strict. I followed the strictest diet in the world and did it for longer than most people did, whatever do. And I understand how dangerous that is, how unsustainable that is, and how unhappy of a life that leads to. So live my life and then tell me that that's a bad thing. But in the end, I think it's just more real, and I think it's more sustainable. And I think if it's sustainable, you can be more consistent. When you're, and when you're consistent, you're going to get results. So if that means you're eating a donut every day, so be it, because you can still make progress doing that. So I'm going to find whatever works best for the person, and that's going to look different for everyone.
Very true. And then that really leads into growth mindset, your last core value. I mean, you train once a month, you get educated, you get more update on the information. You have to be able to grow.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm never going to know everything.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I'm ever going to stop trying. I mean, I'm always probably a little too obsessive about this, but I've gone through everyone's course. I've bought every book. I reread them. I'm constantly trying to learn and trying to be as knowledgeable as I possibly can. I have all sorts of certifications. Some are worth it, some aren't. But it's, you know, I never want to stay stagnant. And that's definitely one thing that I have taken from bodybuilding, is that it's really taught me that I need to always be pursuing improvement. And, you know, I did that from a physical standpoint, where I was trying to improve how my own personal or my physical development would show up on stage. And if you put in the work, you would see improvement. That was a cool thing about bodybuilding, I guess, is that, you know, if you put in the work, you're going to see the outcome that you want. And I've tried to let that trickle down into other areas of my life, where if I put in the work and try to work on myself and get myself to a better place, then my ability to impact other people is going to be enhanced. And so that's how I've always seen it. And I think that's what I was almost out of a period or a feeling of just feeling that imposter syndrome, I think, when I started, where like, how can I possibly give other people advice when I feel like this is obvious information and I don't feel qualified to even charge a dollar, let alone $100. And so it was like that feeling of inadequacy that led me to be obsessed with learning more. And it took me years before I felt more comfortable. And I feel like I know a decent amount now, but there's a lot more I don't know than what I do know. And I'm trying to close that gap, but it's chasing a carrot that I'm never going to reach.
Very, very humble. How important is weight training to overall health?
It's very important. And I think it becomes increasingly more important the older we get.
Right.
You know, even if your primary goal is fat loss, I think that weight training needs to be a part of that. And it's going to be more beneficial than cardio. Cardio is great too. And I'm not saying, that it's not important and shouldn't be a part of your journey, but you're going to burn more calories when you weight train. You're going to shape your physique with weight training. You get all the other benefits of building muscle, which enhances your metabolic rate. It improves hormones. It increases strength, endurance, confidence, all sorts of things. It's a much more well-rounded exercise regimen than just doing cardio. But everyone thinks cardio when they think of fat loss because you sweat and your heart rate's elevated and it feels like you're working hard. Whereas weight training can sometimes seem, I think the way that most people train, a little bit more leisurely. But the opposite is true. And the effect that you get from weight training is going to be probably 2 to 3 times more effective than cardio.
Wow. And does weight training need to be in a weight room?
Not necessarily, but I think there's a lot of advantages to doing something that's outside of your home. So I think, you know, I don't know how it's not everyone had an individual experience as they went through COVID, but I have a decent setup in my basement. I could do pretty much anything I wanted to with weights, but my focus was not there. And this is coming from a guy that was very focused in his own fitness journey. But when I'm at home, there's all sorts of distractions and it's really easy to, you know, cut a set short or not push yourself as hard. Whereas when you're in a gym where that is the sole focus, that is it's, you know, singularity of purpose when you're there, focus, get it done, push yourself, get out. And I find that I have much more productive workouts and I get a lot more out of the time that I'm putting in when I'm in a place that's dedicated to doing just that rather than in a place that can be all sorts of things like my house or my living room.
Right. When you're working with a client and they want to, you know, they want to lose weight, they want to get healthy, hopefully they're committed to it. Is your approach with them more science or more art?
Well, it's, I mean, everything is science-based and evidence-based, but you have to adapt it to the individual and you have to meet them where they're at. So, you know, this is something I've said, I don't know how many times, but you could have the most perfectly written, scientifically based program on the planet and give it to somebody. And if they can't follow it, it's worth absolutely nothing.
Right.
Because, you know, and honestly, like when you look at how a bodybuilder eats, where they're eating, you know, tilapia and asparagus and chicken and rice and broccoli and egg whites and oatmeal, will that work? Yeah, of course that works. Is that sustainable for most people? Hell no. And because they can't stick to it, they're not going to get the results. So their health doesn't improve. They don't lose the body fat. They don't gain muscle. They're just back to square one or worse. So, you know, I think you have to meet them where they're at. You have to find the right balance for them. You have to adapt it to their schedule, their food preferences. You know, how, what their goals are, what their experiences, what their dieting history is. And that's going to end up being a lot more effective, even if it's imperfectly written, it's going to be a lot more effective than something that's so rigid that someone can't stick to it.
Were you always, you know, we talk about discipline on the podcast, you know, how do I lose the weight? I always say discipline. Do you think you were always disciplined? As a child?
No. I quit on a lot of things, I think, when I was a kid. And I think that's been a part of who I was and who I am, but I think it had to be developed, it had to be learned. And you know, I never went in the military or anything like that, but you know, bodybuilding was probably the biggest learning experience that I could have gone through to develop that discipline. Because it was required of me. And I think me waiting to go through that process until I was 30 made me approach it differently, because I think if I had done it in my 20s, I may not have had the maturity to have the discipline to do it appropriately. But since I had put it off for so long, and it was something that I had wanted for so long, that I really was grateful for the opportunity, and I wanted to have no regrets as I went through the process. And just as you go through that, it really teaches you a lot. And so, I mean, again, that's what I've constantly got out of it every time I went through it, as hard as it was. And as much as you question yourself, you question the process, you question why you're doing this, multiple times as you go through the process, but you keep going, you learn a lot about yourself, and it's something that I'll forever be grateful for. But it's not just the physical change. It's so much more what happens internally.
Yeah, you mentioned that fitness is the foundation of discipline, health, wealth, relationships. Is it necessary for those clients, those people that want to lose weight, that want to work with you, to have discipline? Is it a requirement?
I think some element has to be there. Yeah. But again, I think it's something that can be developed as well. And you have to meet somebody where they're at. So if they, you know, if their life is in chaos, which, you know, if we're evaluating the, you know, somebody that does finally take that action and makes that decision, I think, you know, as we were touching on earlier on, you kind of have to hit a point where you recognize that things aren't going well. And, you know, maybe that is rock bottom. Maybe it is just, you know, a realization you came to one day, like, oh my gosh, my pants don't fit. Or, you know, I broke 300 pounds on the scale, whatever it is, something happened that caused you to take action. But you can't just jump into the deep end without ever having learned how to swim. You know, you need to start out in a place that's going to allow you to grow, and allow you to win. Because if all you're shown is that you can't do it, and that you're just shown failures from day one, then you will fail. That will break you. So you have to, you know, it's not the baby step thing. It's not necessarily that, but it's just meeting you where you're at. And you may be in a different place now than where you were before. Maybe you were super fit and you were super dedicated when you were in your 20s, but now you're in your 40s and life is completely different. Your body's completely different. Your hormones are different. You shouldn't treat it the same way. Why would you? It doesn't even make sense, but that's not how our brain logically thinks. Like, I used to do this when I was in high school. Yeah, try to do it in your 40s. It's not going to work. I know, I'm in my 40s. We're a different person in our 40s. So I think it's a matter of meeting someone where they're at.
When I had that kind of come to Jesus moment, I don't know if that's politically correct term, but it is what it is. But
I like that term.
I like it. We all know what it means. I believe. Yeah. My doctor told me that. I said, you know, damn it, Joe, you put yourself in this spot. Now you're going to get out. Do you think there's a hindrance with some people when they come to a coach like yourself, they're kind of admitting defeat and saying, I need help, and they feel that's a position of weakness?
Well, I think some people probably do feel that way. I mean, I think there's a lot of negative self-talk for most people. And that, you know, this is something I've actually looked into quite a bit and studied over the past few years. There's a book that came out in 2020 called It Takes What It Takes. And it was written by an author by the name of Trevor Moad. He actually passed away last year, unfortunately, but he was known as like the world's best brain trainer. He actually worked with elite athletes and overcoming the negative self-talk. And he one thing he said, and he said this in multiple interviews, and he talks about it in his book, is that he is not necessarily a believer in positive thinking, because he doesn't know if there is power in positive thinking. There might be, and I'm sure there's people out there like, oh no, there totally is. But one thing he knows for sure, and I would definitely agree, is that there is definitely power in negative thinking, and that it impacts you negatively. And if you speak something out loud that is negative or, you know, disparaging, it's going to be amplified to the power of 10. And it's incredible how abundant that is this day and age. I think it's gotten worse, especially over the last couple of years, where just mental health has gone way down, as a whole in the country. And it's really impacted a lot of people negatively. And And I think just due to the standards in our society, which are changing, which we've touched on that a little bit, but when you are overweight, when you are unhealthy, when you don't feel comfortable in your own skin, when you don't feel confident, there is a lot of negative self-talk. Mm. And if you stay in that negative headspace, you're never going to get out. It's almost impossible. So, you know, that's something that we try to recognize, you know, patterns in the way people talk and implement different strategies to help pull people out of that headspace and show them wins, show them that they can do some of these things. Because if somebody's in that negative headspace and you show them failures, you're just proving them right. And that's about the worst thing you could ever do. Mm. And I think that's a mistake that many coaches make. And so it's important that we, again, meet them where they're at, show them some wins, build upon that. And to the point where they're the negative self-talk, you can never silence it completely because it's always going to be there, but it's not dominating their thoughts and it's not determining their actions.
You're not weak if you ask for help. You want some accountability. You want, you know, people who know what they're talking about. And especially when it comes to your body, you know, it's so important. Jeff Lader, what motivates you?
I don't think I've ever been asked that question. You know, I get up early every single day and, you know, ultimately, I mean, yeah, I want to help people. But my ultimate why is my family. Hmm. But I also want to be able to sleep well at night and I want to feel like, you know, I've been able to positively impact other people in a way that's meaningful and could potentially change the direction of their life. And, you know, when you work with people, it's just humans in general, it's a difficult thing sometimes because we're all, you know, have so many different upbringings and backgrounds and attitudes and perspectives and cultures. And, you aren't always able to reach everybody that you want to. And it's one of those things that haunts me. And that's one of the things that drives me to try and improve that and close that gap so that because I do believe that everyone can be reached. But due to the diversity of our world and the diversity of individuals and personalities, it's a difficult thing to do. Mm. And, you know, if I'm not the person for them, then someone else out there is. And, so, I mean, I don't know what motivates me. I mean, just try to become the best version of myself. And that, I mean, best husband, best dad, best fur baby dad. And be as impactful for others as I possibly can.
Hmm. And how do you measure success?
I don't know. I mean, there's quantitative ways, there's qualitative ways. I mean, I think with the people around me are happy and fulfilled, and I am, then something's going right. Hmm. And we're always going to have days that are bad and good. And I think it's, as long as it's trending in the right direction, then we're doing good things. I can't let those bad days, dominate the good days. And you want to make sure you have more good days than bad days, but you also have to accept that some of those bad days are going to come. So as long as it's trending in the right day, right way, and you have more wins than losses, then you're doing something right.
What a wonderful antidote and a perfect way to end this delightful conversation. Thank you so much, Jeff Lader, for your time today. Really enjoyed it. Your content is tremendous. You know, you're very confident, but you're never arrogant. You know, sometimes I see that. I see just slight, not in you, in others, and I don't like it. But you are very confident and you're very sincere in all your in everything that you do on your sites and all your media and talking to you. And I really enjoy that about you. And you're doing a great thing because, again, if we go back to the very first thing we talked about, is that, you know, obesity and overweight is just a huge. I'm going to say the largest issue in our country, maybe the world. And people like yourself are doing great things and we need more like you. Jeff, how do we get in touch with you?
Well, thank you for your kind words first, Joe. But, you know, the best way, honestly, and the easiest way is probably to find me on Instagram. It's just Jeff Later, J-E-F-F-L-A-T-E-R, all together. If you went to jefflater.com, you'd find me there as well. But yeah, that's probably the easiest way. You can find all my links in there. You can find other content from me. You can always shoot me a message on there as well.
Absolutely. I'll make sure to put those in the show notes. And of course, your L8R lifestyle there right behind you and those wonderful trophies of the swords and the cups from those days are very, very cool as well. Jeff, thanks so much for your time. I hope one day to be in the Salt Lake City area and you, perhaps the wives and us will get together and have a cup of coffee.
I would love that. And thank you so much for the opportunity. This was a great conversation. And the reason why I do this, honestly, this was awesome.
Thanks, Jeff. Be well.
You too.
Thank you for listening and or viewing Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversations. Please share this episode with one or two of your friends who you think may benefit from the episode. Our website, www.joeypinns.com. There you find lots of resources and you could join our mailing list. Please follow us on all our social media, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Podcast information, the video version of our podcast is on YouTube. Please subscribe. Audio is on all major podcasting platforms. Please follow them. And if you like it, please consider giving 5-star rating. Would really appreciate that. Would you like to financially support the podcast? You can go to our Patreon site. Consider $5, $10, or $20 a month. There's all kind of plans that we have there. It's like a one-time payment. What is this podcast episode worth to you? $25, $50, $100, $500, $1,000, $5,000. You be the judge. You can go to our PayPal account to do that as well. Thank you again for listening or watching Joey Pinn's Discipline Conversation.